Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Jonathan Ibrahim. What's up, fellas?
What's up, boys? Anytime Jonathan's on, I got to bring, you know, my helmet because, you know, stuff might start getting thrown around. Vicious debater.
Well, hey, man, you got me this year. Your Pacers looked really good, and my Raptors really did not. You got me this year. I owe you an apology. I think I was a little disrespectful to the Pacers in that first round prediction, but I learned my lesson.
Well, I mean, I guess you guys can both agree on something. You were knocked out by the LeBron James and the Cavs, so you can kind of, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess. But moving on to there, we're here to talk Eastern Conference, Cavs versus Celtics. Obviously, this is something we've already seen in the past, but before we get started, just a quick reminder, you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and now airing on Dash Radio. But let's get started on the Cavs side. What have we learned about the Cavs this postseason?
I mean, what we learned is, you know, LeBron can carry the offense when it's struggling for a series, and then when the offense starts clicking around him and guys understand their roles and Kevin Love's aggressive, then they can roll through a number one seed that had 59 wins in four games.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, there's not a whole lot to say. It's we've learned that LeBron James is really good at basketball.
didn't know that one.
Yeah. I mean, like that, it's really that simple. It's every year this guy seems to get a little bit better at something or show us something a little new. And I think the one thing we can take away from this is that if the role players come to play and they're hitting their shots, especially from the outside, the Cavs are they're going to be a tough matchup for any team. But when those role players are not hitting those shots, they can be bounced by anyone.
Yeah. Age 33, like you guys mentioned, not to touch on it too much, but LeBron has just been dominant. 34 points, 9 assists, 9 rebounds, over 55% on the field in the postseason. When, you know, his team hasn't been amazing throughout the whole entire postseason, he's really held it down. But what are your thoughts on Kevin Love?
And two game winners.
Yeah, and two. Oh, sorry, I forgot that. Two beautiful game winners. But what are your thoughts on Kevin Love? Obviously, the Kevin Love we saw against the Pacers and the Kevin Love we saw against the Raptors was completely different.
Yeah, I mean, against the Pacers, he was settling for jump shots. He wasn't going down low and being physical. Against the Raptors, he was going down low and being physical while also, you know, using the jump shot when it felt suited. When Kevin Love is being aggressive, it's completely different, obviously. After 21-13 in that second round, he shot under 40% in the first round, and we saw him shoot above 40% in the second round. So for me, it was just Kevin Love being aggressive. He heard everyone say, where's the Minnesota Timberwolves Kevin Love, and he brought that guy back.
Yeah, it's tough trying to gauge a guy like Kevin Love because, like you said, Corey, there's a lot of people saying, well, he was this in Minnesota, why can't he be that? And obviously when you're playing with a guy like LeBron, or, you know, in previous years where he's playing with LeBron and Kyrie, you're not going to get that same level of production. But I don't want to criticize him too much because when they needed him, he came up and played big. So it's just a situation where he really needs to maintain the momentum he has going into the final couple rounds, and hopefully they can get a lot of production out of him.
What are our thoughts on the Cavs defense? Obviously it's been better in the postseason, but where is it at? Is, you know, rim protection still is a concern. So what are your thoughts on their D right now?
I mean, it's definitely suspect. There are still moments where the defense is questionable. The one thing I can say is in this playoffs in particular, we've seen them at times put together, you know, consecutive defensive stops. You know, they've been able to limit. They did a very good job of, I mean, obviously DeRozan missed a bunch of easy looks or his kind of looks, but they made, you know, they put him in some tough positions. In the first round, they put a ton of trapping on Victor Oladipo. So they've done a good job of managing some of their deficiencies by attacking some of the other stars they've faced. And then in rim protection, obviously Tristan Thompson has been better since he's been getting minutes. But, you know, I still think attacking the paint is a place the Cavaliers struggle.
Yeah, I mean, defensively they've been better, but there really wasn't a whole ton of they weren't really that great in the regular season. So there wasn't a whole ton that they could have done to be worse.
True.
It's it's still – it's defending the perimeter, and especially, like you mentioned, Nick, defending the rim has been difficult for them. And it has really mainly to do with their personnel. They've got the oldest team in the league. I think they're the oldest team in the league, which
feels
means
like it sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, like you just look at the way some of those players, you just their lateral movement when they're playing defense, it's just not there. They don't have the quickness to keep up with opposing teams' guards. And maybe it's just because we've seen them play two teams with, you know, extremely talented guards. But at Golden State, which is their ultimate goal, is to beat that team. It's not like their guards are any slouches. So, you know, their ability to defend the perimeter is just – it's just not there. And then, like you said, especially when they're playing Kevin Love at the five, they don't have any rim protection. And I mean, other than Tristan Thompson, who's not a great rim protector, he's okay. But other than him, they have nothing to keep guys away from the basket. So it's just a problem that they don't have the personnel to improve on, and they just have to do the best they can.
The one thing I can say is I do like Kevin Love and Al Horford matchup only because the size isn't that big of a difference.
Yeah, I think LeBron's probably pretty happy he didn't have to worry about Joel Embiid down there, because I'm not really sure how they would have handled him. Another thing on the Cavs side I think we learned is, like I mentioned on a previous show, Zach Lowe mentioned Kevin Love and Kyle Korver developing some great chemistry off ball, and I think that's something to keep an eye on. But on the Celtics side, what have we learned about this postseason? This team is just grinding out wins, but what have we learned about them?
Keep doubting me and watch me go. It feels like at every turn, there's been another reason to go against the Celtics. And at every turn, the Celtics have made us, the media, eat our words. I thought the Sixers were the better team on paper. The Celtics didn't care to hear that. In the first round, we saw on paper a probably more talented Bucks team couldn't handle it in seven against the Celtics. The Celtics continue to get it done, you know, from top to bottom. Rozier playing great, Jaylen Brown playing good, Jason Tatum, you know, for 19 years old, that kid is playing phenomenal. You mentioned it, Nick, the other day, by far the best rookie in the playoffs, or had the best rookie performance in the playoffs overall so far. He looks so poised for a 19-year-old. Al Horford, Mr. Reliable, Mr. Consistent. And again, you know, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals, again, without Kyrie and without Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway is how well this team's been coached and how well Brad Stevens has got these guys playing. Don't get me wrong, the players have got to go out there and execute, which, by the way, I think is the difference between the Sixers and the Celtics. The Sixers just didn't execute, and especially in that fourth quarter, just way too many times the ball was thrown out of bounds needlessly.
Yeah, multiple fourth quarters, they were just terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, part of that is their age, and the other part of that is just, you know, when guys are having an off night, Brett Brown's got to be able to pull those guys. And I think J.J. Redick was one of those guys last night. But enough about the Sixers. The Celtics, I mean, they were the complete opposite. When it came to execution, they had, you know, a little bit of sloppy play here and there. But for the most part, it was making the right pass, taking open shots, finding open guys. Like, everything was done well. Whereas, you know, the two teams they played, they were just too sloppy to keep up with them. The Celtics have been great. I think they've had four or five guys scoring double digits throughout the playoffs, which is remarkable. And like you said, Corey, Tatum at 19 years old leading the way for these guys has been amazing to watch. Jaylen Brown.
He's been fearless too, Tatum. He's been willing to go out and beat at the rim. He's really taken on some big shots, some big moments, and he's really capitalized. Jaylen Brown, like you said, John, he's another guy. Terry Rozier. Brad Stevens has these guys playing very confidently in their executing. What are our thoughts on, like, a little bit towards the negative side? Some of these offensive stretches where they've gone ice cold, how much do you think that's going to hurt them in this series?
I mean, it's definitely something to be a little concerned about, but the positive is arguably they're playing the worst defense that they've faced yet in the playoffs. Obviously the Bucks have their own issues, and I mean, each one of the teams they played has had suspect defense, but you know, that's something that you have to live with. You know, Marcus Smart's not a high percentage shooter. As you mentioned off the pod, Terry Rozier shooting 42%. That's not great. At least shooting 39% from three. You know,
Bane's knocked down a ton of threes. He's knocked down more threes than like a couple proven NBA players. Like, I think he had more threes than Marco Bellinelli and Robert Covington in the previous series.
That's ridiculous. Covington, a complete fraud. But But yeah, I think for the Celtics, you're going to have to live with that. So I think their defense is so good that it can withstand those ice cold droughts. And because they just don't have a star at this point in time, and it's a collective, you know, team effort, sometimes you're just going to have those offensive stretches where you can't score. And that's when you go to a guy like Jason Tatum, who, when was it, in game three, you know, he went bucket for bucket against Ben Simmons and Embiid in that overtime in fourth quarter. So, you know, that and Al Horford, I think they'll be okay, even though the offense at times can go a little cold.
Yeah, I mean, the degree to which it's going to hurt them is really going to depend on which Cavaliers team shows up. If it's the Cavaliers team we saw against Indiana, there's probably a chance that it doesn't hurt them that much because, well, as they're missing their shots, the Cavs are going to come down on the other end and they're not going to punish them for it. Whereas if we get the Cavs from the Toronto series where guys are hitting their open shots, creating for each other, it's going to be a different story. And if that's the Cavs team that shows up, they're just going to flatly outscore Boston. Doesn't matter how well they play on the other, in the other areas of the game, they're just going to get outscored.
Moving on to our next segment, where can the Celtics attack the Cavs? You know, what do they have to do to win the series and kind of take advantage of some of the Cavs' flaws?
For the Celtics, I think it's two things. Attack the paint, which, as we mentioned briefly, now the rim protection of the Cavs has been suspect. We saw them attack Joel Embiid consistently and effectively. Now they're going against Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. This is a much easier team to attack at the rim. So for the Celtics, I think definitely attack them in the paint, and then you got to be careful with the basketball. They've done a good job overall. You know, they've at times become very sloppy with the basketball, but you don't want to give LeBron and company any more opportunities than possible with turnovers. So for me, it's attack the paint, protect the ball.
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail right on the head there. The attacking them in the paint is going to be big, but also making sure that they're hitting their open shots, because that's one area where Boston seems to, well, that's where they were kind of run flat, is when they're getting open looks and they're not connecting. Their guard play is going to be important. Rozier is going to have to make whoever's playing point guard, whether it's George Hill or Jose Calderon, whoever it is, he's got to make them work. Tatum and Brown have got to do the same thing on the other side. And then when it comes to LeBron James, just throw a bunch of different looks at him, try and wear him down, and do what you can to keep him away from the rim.
Yeah, I think you guys are pretty spot on. Protect the ball, attack the paint. I mean, I think for Boston's side, you probably want to slow it down offensively. The Cavs probably have more weapons. You want to make life as difficult as possible for LeBron. And I think you want to attack some of the weaker defenders. If they're playing Kyle Korver out there, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum really need to attack him. Same thing with Kevin Love. He's playing center. Attack him at the rim. And I think fast break-wise, there's some opportunities, you know, just because the Cavs at times can be lazy. And sometimes it's LeBron, because he's doing so much, he doesn't get back on defense or complaining about a call. Also, I've seen Kevin Love do it a couple times where he's lazy to get back on D. So kind of take advantage of some of the transition opportunities. From the Cavs side, where can the Cavs attack the Celtics, other than LeBron just being a monster?
I don't know where the weak point of the Celtics is defensively.
I think inside is still an area for them, because that's where Philly had some really nice success.
So I guess we'll go with that, right? I think the Celtics, which is great about them, is they can handle switches. You know, their team is very versatile. And then, you know, whoever you throw at them, it feels like anyone can match up against anybody for the Celtics. So I think for the Cavs, it probably is going to be, space to floor. You know, like you said, they are a little bit weak inside still. You know, if Kevin Love's being aggressive down low and LeBron's, you know, getting to the paint with ease, hopefully that can set up some screen opportunities for Kyle Korver, which you mentioned too, with Kevin Love and Kyle Korver. Maybe Korver can find some looks. Jeff Green has been hitting his threes from the corner, at least last round he did. J.R. Smith all of a sudden is hitting threes again too. So for me, I guess space to floor.
Yeah, that'll be big. I mean, the Cavs shot 41% for three against Toronto and only 32% against Indiana. So it'll really come down to if they're making their shots. I don't know how much success they'll have on the inside, because unlike Philly, they don't really have a guy who can go inside with the back to the basket and score in
I think it's more so not even just on post-ups. I think in cuts. You know, a lot of the cuts where they were overreacting, I think Boston sometimes on the three-point shooters, and they were able to kind of capitalize. I think that Kevin Love Korver duo is going to be interesting to keep an eye on. If I'm also Cleveland, I want to force Boston into half-court offense. Like we mentioned, they've had cold stretches. Make some of these guys, you know, make their shots, execute the game plan, and get the buckets. And I think George Hill will be a factor in the series. He's been low-key pretty good, and I think he can pester, you know, Terry Rozier and some of these inexperienced guards on Boston. Key matchups of the series.
I'm going to say Kevin Love versus Al Horford.
I like it.
Obviously LeBron James is what he is. But I think, you know, for both sides, you know, the Cavs really need Kevin Love to be as effective as he was last series. Well, this series he's going to be going against one of the best defenders in the game at the center position in Al Horford. Al Horford's going to be giving him a ton. I mean, there were times where Embiid was unable to move Horford down low. Horford is an extremely good defender, completely still underrated in this league.
Very smart. He had his timing on Embiid down very well, and he was kind of starting to anticipate his moves a little bit.
Especially in that last game, he was also, you know, anytime people got low in the paint, he was really active with the hands and able to poke loose, I think, one or two times from Ben Simmons. So, you know, he's a very, like you mentioned, very smart, a ton of defensive basketball IQ. And then offensively, you know, Horford's getting really good at, you know, using his pump fake and et cetera down low. I think that matchup in particular is just going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think that really is the key matchup. Another fun one is going to be Jaylen Brown and J.R. Smith, and just seeing who gets the most out of those players. They're both going to be important to this series, whether or not J.R.'s shot's going in, whether or not he's, you know, focused defensively. That's going to play a big part. And we know Jaylen Brown, we know what he's about. We know he's a tough defender. We know he can hit shots, but just seeing what level of production they get from him as opposed to the opposing shooting guard and seeing exactly how either one of those guys can really elevate their team.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown's going to be a different kind of person for JR to defend because he's so physical and he's so aggressive sometimes getting to the rim, so I'll definitely keep an eye on that. I think I want to watch Jason Tatum, see what he can do, how the Cavs defend him, if he can do it again at the next step in the playoffs. And then obviously the most important matchup of any series, including LeBron, is how is Boston going to defend LeBron? What do you guys think they're going to do?
I mean, it's size-wise, they have no one really who can – I mean, Marcus Morris is going to – I think going to get a ton of minutes on LeBron because of the size. But you're going to see Jason Tatum and a little bit of Jason Tatum. Yeah, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Those two guys in particular are going to get a lot of minutes on LeBron. It's like we mentioned, I won't even try to Marcus Smart gets some time on him. It's going to be a collective effort. There is no stopping LeBron James. All you can hope to do is limit him. So I just think Steve is going to throw a ton of different bodies at him.
Yeah, I agree. Don't forget they've got that Semi Ojeleye coming off the bench.
That's interesting.
I always forget about Semi.
Well, he doesn't play a whole lot, but he is a really, really big
he's a
big
tough guy. Dude.
Yeah, he's what, 6'7", 6'8", 250 pounds. He's roughly the same size as LeBron.
He looks like an outside linebacker for New England.
Absolutely. Like and the thing is that he's probably the only guy on their team that is strong enough to really wear on LeBron. So we'll probably see a little bit of him, especially if the series isn't going well for Boston in the early stages. They might start experimenting.
All right. Deciding factors of the series. What's going to, you know, determine who wins and loses?
I mean, what determines winning and losing is going to be if LeBron James has help. Obviously LeBron James is going to get his, in round one, we still saw what LeBron can do with very little help. In round two, where we saw what he has, what he can do with help. I think the overall X factor still is if LeBron has help. I think depending on how the supporting cast is, will determine how far this series goes. I think the Celtics have a great chance to upset and beat the Cavs, even though I know it's a 2-4 matchup. So the Celtics are technically, not the underdog, but it feels like they definitely are the underdog. So I think for me, it's got to be a supporting cast.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that is the most important factor for Cleveland, especially if whether or not those guys show up. The other thing that you want to watch is who's going to win the chess match between Brad Stevens and LeBron James / Ty Lue. That's going to be an interesting kind of back and forth. You know, how are they going to counter each other? How they're going to make adjustments in between games, in between quarters even. So I think those two factors alone are going to be what decides this series.
Yeah. I mean, obviously LeBron and the supporting cast are going to be huge. I think 3-point percentage, something to always keep an eye on. Turnovers for Boston, because in some of the games they've lost in the playoffs, they've been turning over the ball a lot. In other games, they've been, you know, keeping it in control and really giving them a chance to win the game. Also, pace, I think, is important. If they really are able to slow it down, kind of the Cavs, I think, have somewhat of an advantage because offensively they have LeBron and a whole bunch of offensive playmakers, where Boston, on the other hand, they're not as experienced in that field. But predictions, you know, who's winning the series?
I'm going to say Cavaliers in seven.
Whoa.
I think this goes full tilt. I don't know. I doubted the Celtics going into the last round, and they completely, to me, you know, they wiped the floor with the Sixers overall. Obviously, the Sixers were a little bit inexperienced, but I'm going to say Cavs in seven. I think the Celtics are for real, and we'll see how good they are next year when they're healthy.
My gut tells me that this game will go maybe five or six games, but my heart and my eyes, after seeing what they did steamrolling my Raptors, says this is going to be a sweep.
Oh, it's tough. You know, Corey kind of mentioned Boston kind of surprised me in the last round as well, but I'm going to go Cavs in five. I think, you know, Boston can squeeze out one game, but they really, yeah, they had to deal with Giannis and they had to deal with Embiid and Simmons, but they haven't had to deal with LeBron and the offensive playmakers and the experienced team this is. Obviously, it's not the same team for the Cavs, but they still have plenty of guys that know what they're doing. And I think Boston obviously has kind of been playing with house money, because they weren't expected to be here with the injuries they have. So I'm going with Cavs in five.
Damn, no faith.
No faith. I Boston can really
prove you guys wrong again.
It's not that I don't have faith, and I know I'm being a little unfair to the Celtics, but I just want the Cavs to sweep the Celtics so we can stop talking about blowing up Toronto.
I mean, it would help, but I think – I don't know. The Cavs are starting to hit. If supporting cast shows up, I mean, I'm thinking Cavs five or six. If it goes seven, I would be super surprised. I just don't see how Boston can win three games. It's just a lot for them to do, and they just have to play over their head once again. If the Cavs play like they did against the Pacers, they can maybe push it seven, but still, it's just like LeBron and Kevin Love playing better, Korver playing better, J.R. Smith playing better, Jeff Green, Tristan Thompson. It feels like from round one to round two, it's a different team. And you have to assume there is some confidence booster from beating a Raptors team. You know, obviously they've had their number in the past, but the Raptors had an amazing, you know, regular season. So there is some boost there.
True. And LeBron James loves to sweep Al Horford.
And Boston. I think, you know, we have to remember he hates Boston. I think there's not a ton of teams that LeBron probably hates, but I feel like Boston's one of those teams he dislikes.
Yeah, another thing to think about is the fact that the Celtics have home court advantage. So if it goes to seven games, it's going to be in Boston. So that kind of – that I have a feeling that maybe Cleveland's going to jump out early, take game one. And if they do that, then I don't know if the Celtics will have the confidence to bounce back.
Yeah, it should be a fun series, you know, even if it does go, you know, four or five, six or seven.
I'll even say that the Celtics lead at 1.32 in this series, and LeBron has to bring the Cavs back.
I would be immensely impressed on that. I just don't envision it. But who knows, you know, if these guys are shoot. I mean, to some extent, last series for the Boston was almost an outlier with some of the shooting numbers that some of the guys have had. So if they're able to maintain this ridiculous shooting percentage, obviously you always have a chance. But I feel like they'll kind of get more back to the mean in this next series. And I think MVP-wise, obviously we all pick the Cavs and we're going to pick LeBron for MVP.
Correct.
Yeah. Jonathan, I don't have to ask you that. I already know.
he could be injured with two broken legs. I'd still pick him, man.
Wheelchair LeBron out there still dropping buckets, triple doubles all day. But that wraps it up, guys. As always, thank you for hopping on, Jonathan, Corey. As always, thank everybody for listening. You can check out the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and now airing on Dash Radio.
Peace.